Well, they call them the natural. Natural as can be. Yeah, they call them the natural. It just comes naturally. He's the son of a son and the son of a gun. The hall's doing a rodeo bulldog. That's a natural one. Didn't have easy shoes to fill, but he had to do it his own way. He did it with courage, strong will. Now just look at him today. He's walked out of the shadow and he's blazing his own trail. He told him from the beginning that I'll never fail. Yeah. Now they call him the natural. He's natural as can be. They call him the natural.
Hello, my name is Bob Bamber and welcome to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. We are jumping back in the time machine to October of 1993, where I'm being joined by Craig Wilson. Craig, good evening.
Good evening, Bob.
We would normally be joined by Colin, but he got vaporized during the time travel. What can you do? It's new technology. But I think we'll be able to rebuild him next week, for the show at the end of November. So that means I'm on news duty with Craig. So I will kick us off with the news that Razor Ramon is the new Intercontinental Champion. After Shawn Michaels was, kind of relieved of his, left the company, WWF President Jack Tunney announced that there would be a 20-man over-the-top rope battle royal, as Michaels had been stripped of the title. Razor Ramon and Rick the Model Martel were the final two people in the battle royal, which also included Bob Backlund and Randy Savage. And Ramon, the following week on Raw, pinned Martel with the Razor's Edge to win the title, fully embracing his new babyface persona.
Plenty of stuff going on over in WCW. They had their big Halloween Havoc pay-per-view. Largely a good show, but probably not one for someone that likes a clean finish. The big sort of story around the time was the Rick Rude's international title not being recognised by WCW, but officials, they spun it as being the officials from non-USA board members accepting it. So I think it sort of spins into their European tour, which is coming up, that takes in UK and Germany, just trying to add a little bit of legitimacy to that title. Elsewhere on the card, we had the bout to crown WCW's franchise player, where Sting defeated Sid in a rematch of their 1990 Halloween Havoc main event. The match in 1990 somehow managed to have an even worse finish than this one. I don't know if you can remember that, but it involved Barry Windham being dressed as Sting, losing the match, and then Sting coming out and revealing the ruse. Equally bad one this time, with Colonel Bob Parker seemingly being unable to tell the difference between bright green fluorescent tights and bare legs. And the other one of the other big matches, the Rick Rude International title was on the line against Ric Flair, with Terry Taylor as one of the special guest referees. That involved two ref bumps and Taylor's decision being overturned, with Rude retaining with a DQ. And the main event, the Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal match, pitted WCW World Heavyweight Champion Vader against Cactus Jack in a bloody Texas Death Match. Vader won at the end, despite being DDT'd on a steel chair by Cactus Jack when Harley Race tasered Cactus.
And we'll be discussing that as our first major point of the show. Moving on to some more WWF news. Randy Savage ripped on Hulk Hogan during a in-character WWF radio interview. Savage called Hogan the quote-unquote worst prima donna he had ever met, and said that his ego had gone so far out of control that Hulk Hogan had consumed Terry Bollea, Terry Bollea being Hulk Hogan's real name. Savage said that he had lost respect for Hogan when he lied about steroid use during Arsenio Hall. He had also gone to talk about the relationship between his wife and Hogan's wife, and Hogan's success, or lack thereof, on the big screen. It is believed that Jim Ross and Johnny Polo, the two hosts of the show, were in on the story before Savage started talking.
Sticking with Hogan, the former WWF champion has been in discussions with WCW, but solely in relation to the promotion of the Mr. Nanny film. WCW offered Hulkster a free spot to promote the film, but the deal hinged on Hogan promoting the company at the same time, something that he refused to do. And it might not be a bad thing for the WCW not to be too close a link to the film, because it's been savaged by critics and fans alike. Maybe Savage was right.
Maybe he was. Shawn Michaels, a friend of Shawn Michaels told the PW Torch, that Shawn actually, asked Vince McMahon for some time off, about 3 months worth from wrestling as he felt overworked and burnt out. It's worth noting that in the episodes of Raw since Michaels has quote unquote left the company, he's been mentioned in storyline with his bodyguard Diesel pleading his case for his reinstatement.
Former WWF champion Bret Hart has been very critical of WCW in a radio interview. In a two-pronged attack, he described the company's drug testing policy as shoddy and Ric Flair, the man he defeated to win the WWF title, as the most overrated wrestler there ever was, giving him a paltry 3 out of 10 rating.
Crush returned to the WWF and turned heel on Randy Savage. He'd been written off a number of months ago after receiving 4 bonsai drops by Yokozuna in the lead up to SummerSlam. There was weeks of teasing of Crush's return with him phoning in during matches, claiming that he had a bone to pick with Savage. Crush would return flanked by Mr. Fuji, saying that Savage had let him down. Savage appeared to win Crush over, but ultimately Crush would end up laying Savage out at the close of Raw.
The countdown is on to the WWF's Thanksgiving tradition that is Survivor Series. This year's event at the Boston Gardens is headlined by Yokozuna and his foreign fanatics locking up with Lex Luger and his American heroes, and the event sold out in an hour. In a sharp contrast between the fortunes of the WWF and WCW, a recent WCW event at the Omni in their home city of Atlanta drew a crowd of just 600 fans in what was an 18,000 capacity arena.
We will start as this month with Halloween Havoc results. Colin isn't here to do the results, so I will fill in for him. The show started with a six-man tag team match where the team of Ice Train, Charlie Norris and the Shockmaster defeated Harlem Heat and the Equalizer. Paul Orndorff defeated Ricky Steamboat by count-out. WCW World Television Champion Lord Steven Regal fought Davey Boy Smith to a 15-minute time limit draw, with Regal retaining the title. Dustin Rhodes defeated Steve Austin to retain the WCW United States Heavyweight Championship. The Nasty Boys, with Missy Hart, defeated Marcus Bagwell and Too Cold Scorpio with Teddy Long to win back the WCW World Tag Team Championships. They had lost them in storyline at least the night before on WCW TV. Sting defeated Sid Vicious. Rick Rude defeated Ric Flair by disqualification to retain the WCW International World Heavyweight Championship. And Vader defeated Cactus Jack in a Texas death match. Craig, your thoughts on the show? Kind of initial thoughts?
I thought on paper it looked really good, but I felt it was a little bit flat in places. There was a couple of good matches, definitely a couple of good matches in there, but some of the finishes left a lot to be desired.
No, I think that's probably, I actually was, you know, you're correct in terms of the finishes were horrible, and we're going to break those down in a minute, but I actually thought the pacing of this show was much better than Full Brawl, in terms of Full Brawl had a couple of 25 plus minute matches that weren't very good and didn't warrant the time that they necessarily got. This show I thought was far better paced. The matches I think on the whole were better, but as we said during, you know, just then and during the news as well, this was a show full of terrible finishes. I don't really know where to start, but I'm probably going to start with Rick Rude against Ric Flair, just because this, to me, is one of the worst match finishes I've ever seen. Because this was, one, it was classic, because the month before at Full Brawl, Rude defeated Flair by using the brass knuckles. So what do? They say, look, we're not going to have any dodgy stuff this time. We're going to have a second referee at ringside, which, of course, just springs alarm bells of we're going to find an even more silly way to end this match with a stupid finish. So, shockingly, about 15 minutes into the match, there's a ref bump. Surprise. So Terry Taylor, who's the special guest enforcer, climbs on the apron, steps 1 foot into the ring and gets bumped. I thought that was fantastic. Immediately got bumped. So then we have all that. And so then Rick Rude grabs the brass knuckles that won in the previous match out from his trunks. Flair gives him a belly to back suplex. Rude spills the brass knuckles. Now, here's where it gets interesting. As a WCW guy at ringside, I don't know if he's a photographer or not, picks up the brass knuckles. We don't know whether this was by accident or, as the PW Torch speculated, whether it was actually a WCW Rinku Raku who's annoyed by all of the bad finishes, picking up the brass knuckles. So Flair had to walk over, get the brass knuckles back off him, turns round, knocks Rick Rude out with the brass knuckles. The second referee, Terry Taylor, comes round and begins to count the pin. The first referee misses his cue, and so Terry Taylor has to stop before the three as the referee climbs back into the ring about 5 seconds too late and awards the DQ. If you think it was complicated, go back and watch it, because this was horrendous. Craig, were you as incensed as I was at this finish?
It was a very convoluted finish, and I think I like the notion from the PW Torch that it involved a WCW staffer annoyed at the outcomes, but he may be disgruntled, but he's a little bit of a hypocrite if he just hands Flair back the knucks, but... there was a few, throughout the card, there was a couple of elements of predictability in how the match was going to end. We can talk about the Regal Bulldog was what match was one of them, but we can hit on that when we get to it. But the idea that there was a special enforcer referee, it just screams that the first one's going to take a bump. What was a surprise was that the second one also took a bump.
Well, that wasn't the surprise, because, I mean, it's like, you know, we might as well move on to the Regal Davey Boy match next as you bring it up. But, I mean, that one was the whole thing where they were saying there's 5 minutes left, there's 3 minutes left. It's like just alarm bells ringing that there's going to be a time limit draw. This was, oh, yeah, we're definitely not going to have a screwy finish. We've got two referees, which is just classic, like the double play where, no, we're just going to find a really more stupid way of finishing the match. It was just the fact that he didn't even get into the ring, the second referee, before he got bumped. That was the real kicker. They didn't even try and cover that up, and then all the stuff that followed. The Regal Davey Smith match, I really liked. It wasn't the most high-paced match, but I thought it brought out a different side in Davey Boy that we don't always see, particularly when you contrast this with his matches against Vader in the last few months. Much more technical match. Regal's very good at these matches as well. And I think this on another show with some more legitimate finishes might have been, you know, might have come out looking slightly better. But I think it just ended up being just another kind of non-committal finish, although this one was just a time limit draw.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're right. If this had been the only non-finish, if you will, on the show, it'd have been fine. But it's just another finish that just jarred slightly. I mean, when we talk about the predictability with the two referees there, you've got the 15-minute time limit, which even though WCW did the time limit stuff quite a lot, and I really like the time limit because it adds the sort of legitimacy of it being a sport, but that's by the by. But they just seem to stress it a little bit more in this match. And then when you've got Regal submission, oblique rest hold, one after the other, you knew that this was going down to the wire. For me, you're right, it was a good match, but it got really exciting in the 1.5 minute flourish from the Bulldog at the end. So at the very least, it wasn't the worst ending on the show, and gives you a little bit of hope that you could get another match or two out of it, or a mini feud. And I'd quite like to see that. I think the two of them put on a good, both of them were able to tell a pretty good story. So maybe it's from their days watching World of Wrestling or whatever it was called on British TV when they were younger.
Something like that. We'll cycle up through the card chronologically now. The six-man tag team opener, it didn't really seem to fit any purpose to me. It was slow, clunky, there wasn't much kind of storytelling to it. It didn't really fit any of the qualities that I would describe that an opener should have, really.
No, absolutely. But the one thing it does do is answer the question from a couple of podcasts ago of where the Shockmaster goes from that shambolic debut. I guess it's the opening match on the pay-per-view.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember when we were talking about Full Brawl on the last show about how many of the guys in that main event really deserved to be in the main event. I think it says a lot that three of the eight guys in that match were in the opener of this one. But this match did have the one redeeming feature that there was actually a semi-clean finish in this one. Which is one thing we cannot say about the Paul Orndorff-Ricky Steamboat match. This match was weird to me because it felt like, not weird in a bad sense, but it felt like they were teasing a Steamboat heel turn.
Yeah, no, I thought that. I mean, I liked the aspect of the sort of the more aggressive style from Steamboat. I just thought it was really interesting, sort of pushing the referee around. It's not the sort of clean-cut Steamboat that we'd come to expect. I thought it worked really well. I've never been an enormous Orndorff fan, and I do really like Steamboat, but I could get into Orndorff through being involved in a feud with Steamboat, I have to say.
Yeah, and I thought Steamboat, to his credit, one, that the in-ring reaction was good, but I thought his facial expressions and his believability was probably actually one of the highlights of the show.
Yeah,
in terms of how he carried himself. But, as we're going to say a lot during this review, there was a screwy finish, which, of course, they're teasing a Steamboat heel turn. So what happens? The assassin who accompanied Paul Orndorff to the ring takes out, what did he put in his mask? I can't remember now.
They referred to it as a loaded mask, which sounded pretty weak. I'm not sure. It looked almost like a piece of chalk, but I assume for the purposes of the finish, it was a substance a little bit stronger than that.
Yeah, it was quite a small object, and I'm assuming something quite heavy, because he basically just put it in his mask and then headbutted Steamboat, and then Steamboat was counted out. Shockingly, the referee didn't see it, which is obviously as everyone knows, is the hallmark of any good screwy finish, is the referee getting distracted. We've done the Regal Dave Boy Smith match.
I just want to share something really interesting. Well, in my mind, really interesting. Did you know that the assassin is Jody Hamilton, who is the referee Nick Patrick's dad?
Well, there's that. Yeah, that's a fascinating fact of the evening.
There's one for the conspiracy theorists.
Something like that. Dustin Rhodes against Steve Austin. I was a little underwhelmed by this. I kind of, well, one, just because of the horrible finish, but two, because I kind of expected a little bit more from two of WCW's, I guess you would call, kind of rising stars, maybe?
I think absolutely. I mean, the big thing was clearly the heat that Austin had on the crowd, but I couldn't help but just think that the same fans just weren't really as interested in Dustin Rhodes. Maybe he suffers slightly from the second and third generation stuff that we see quite a lot, that maybe not able to emulate their father to the same extent. But yeah, I mean, on paper, Dustin Rhodes versus Stunning Steve Austin sounds like a very good match, but I was just left wanting a little bit more. It felt almost like a sort of match you'd see on TV rather than a pay-per-view quality. Maybe going through the motions a la house show.
And maybe just thinking there's a terrible finish coming up. Is there any point in busting a gut when it's going to be ruined? I can't even remember the finish of this match. It was bad, but it was by no means the worst finish of the night.
It was the false finish. And then Austin had his feet on the ropes, and then the referee restarted the match without a bell or even telling Austin, and Dustin Rhodes rolled him up to win the match.
That's great. Right. Yeah. Yeah, even more confusing now than watching it first time round, but I kind of forgot it by the end of the show. The Nasty Boys defeated Marcus Bagwell and Too Cold Scorpio to win back their WCW tag team titles. Not quite sure what the point was having them lose it the night before, night before in storyline. This was taped a while ago, on WCW Saturday night. But I actually thought this was one of the better matches on the card. There was some good stuff going on throughout, even if it was related to the managers and whatnot. Yeah, I mean, it was the predictable, which is like the Nasty Boys finish, which is the referee getting distracted and someone getting swapped over. But I thought the Nasty Boys played their role quite well. And Marcus Bagwell and Too Cold Scorpio are a nice combination.
I'm going to sort of have to disagree with you slightly on this. I mean, I agree with it being a lot better than I'd expected, but I went in with pretty low expectations. And the finish is absolutely right. take away Sags's boot and replace it with Jimmy Hart's megaphone, and it was basically for every Nasty Boys match in the WWF. But I just, for me, I thought there was only one performer out of the four, and that was Too Cold Scorpio that even seems quite credible. Bagwell looks very, very green, and I've never really got into the Nasty Boys at all. When you consider that, and I appreciate Pillman's injured, that you have a great tag team like the Hollywood Blondes there. It's the tag match to be between those two teams. And as a huge fan of tag team wrestling, to see the tag straps passed about so often sort of devalues the titles a bit for me. And like you, I just don't really understand why. What was, I believe, broadcast the night before, I think, on the Saturday night, the Bagwell and Scorpio winning the titles, only to drop it storyline-wise 24 hours later, didn't seem to serve much of a purpose.
Yeah, I mean, on the subject of Bagwell and Scorpio, I think that Bagwell kind of, you're right in the sense that I think he is a little bit inexperienced, but I think he's the kind of guy who can play the babyface in peril role, which he kind of played here, and then you've got someone as explosive as Too Cold Scorpio who can get that hot tag and's got that wide range of aerial offense and a very good finishing move. I think that's the kind of, even though they are kind of thrown together, I think that's the kind of relationship that you need for a good tag team.
I think absolutely. And I mean, at least, like you say, they're thrown together, but, and this might just sound really silly, but at least they've got sort of matching costumes. They look like a tag team, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And maybe Bagwell might come really good. And you're right, he did play the Ricky Morton role really well. Maybe I should reserve judgment and not be so gung-ho on my criticism of Bagwell.
I think one thing you mentioned in terms of just the small things like the ring gear, one thing I do like about WCW, and we saw this, you know, at Beach Blast as well, is just the little things with the efforts in terms of the Halloween theme and Jesse Ventura being dressed up as, Tony Schiavone being dressed up as Jesse Ventura being dressed up as a gynecologist, something like that. And then the Halloween theme set, and there was also go back to Beach Blast and all wearing beach gear. It's the little things that kind of get you in the mood for that kind of show. I mean, there was the bizarre kind of opening package of these kids rocking up at Tony Schiavone's mansion. And then he rips off his own face to reveal himself to be a monster, which might be more true to life than we may even appreciate. there's a little thing, I think that's the kind of small things that can add up in terms of someone's enjoyment of a show. Moving on to Sting against Sid Vicious. This match, I kind of thought was about as good as it was going to get between these two. But my main problem with it was that this was a match that was for the quote unquote franchise of WCW, whatever that means. But my bigger problem was it, you've got two guys fighting to be called the franchise of the company. And yet following this match, we've got two world title matches.
Yes, no, the logic was lacking behind this decision. And yet Sid's very, very limited, and Bret Hart might have described Ric Flair as overrated, but Sting's very good, but it takes something pretty special to take someone like Sid and make a really good match, and he doesn't have that. So it was a good match. It was an okay match. It wasn't dreadful, and the finish was, though.
Yeah, but again, what was the finish of this one? I genuinely forgot.
This was the classic manager holding down superstar's feet to get the pin. But despite Sting wearing fluorescent tights and Sid being bare-legged, but both having black boots, Colonel Parker couldn't tell the difference between the two.
That's
held
right.
Down Sid's boots. Sid was infuriated. Sting gets the win.
Yeah. It's not that I haven't watched the show. It's just all blended in together. There's so many finishes to remember, and none of them good.
Far too many screwy finishes.
Something like that. Moving on to the main event. I think that we probably I've got problems with the stipulation that I'm going to come on to, and I've got a bigger problem with the finish, which I'm going to come on to. But I think we've got to credit both Cactus Jack and Vader for an excellent brawl. This really was one of the better matches this year. And a brawl that we haven't, you don't see that often. And I thought these two, even if it was any kind of, you know, 15, 16 minute match, it wasn't anything kind of biblically long, but I thought these two put on a really excellent showing.
Absolutely. And you say it wasn't long as it could have been, but it leaves you wanting a little bit more. I think Vader's an absolute fantastic heel, does that monster heel better than anyone in the world, in my opinion, at this time. And you're right, it was a hard hitting. Both guys bled. They were able to tell a really good but hard-hitting story. And for me, that's probably the match of the evening.
Oh, completely. You know, probably by some distance as well. And I don't want what I'm about to say to necessarily, because I'm probably going to rant here longer than I am praising the match, but the match was excellent. But the stipulation, I mean, a Texas death match where the rules were that falls counted anywhere. The rules took like 2 minutes to explain, which is always a bad sign. Falls counted anywhere. To win the match, you had to pin your opponent anywhere in the ring, outside of the ring. There would then be a quote-unquote 30-second rest period, which sounds incredibly tough in a Texas death match. After the 30-second rest period, your opponent would then have 10 seconds to get to his feet before, and if he couldn't get to his feet within the 10-second time frame, you would then win the match. If you're not following along, I don't blame you. So, we had, the brawl went all up and down the ramp, and they actually had very little time in the ring, which is certainly no complaint. Cactus Jack, I think, pinned Vader twice in the opening kind of 8 to 10 minutes of the match. Obviously didn't win the match because Vader got up in time. We got back into the ring. Vader hit a Vader assault, which still looks great. I could watch that every pay-per-view. There's no bad thing there. We get back up the ramp. Now, I think at this point, Vader got a pin, because I think Vader got a pin on Cactus Jack. So obviously the ref says there's an announcement, there's 30 seconds, you've got a rest period, and then Cactus Jack has got 10 seconds to get up, otherwise he loses the match. All well and good. But 20 seconds into the 30-second rest period, Cactus Jack gets up. So for me at least, that would tell me that, right, well, that's it then. Like, Vader's ability to win the match is over because Cactus Jack is up. The referee had seen this. Then in amongst all that, the referee gets distracted by Vader. Harley Race pulls out a taser. Of all things, a taser. There are certain things that just shouldn't be involved in wrestling. Tasers, guns, knives are a very good starting place. Harley Race pulls out a taser. Obviously doesn't get anywhere near Cactus Jack. Cactus Jack then gets felled, and then because he's down during the 10 count, which the referee doesn't see, Vader retains the title. Such a shame, because this is an excellent match. This is a match that you really got to go back and see. This is one of the best matches of the year, and again, like this entire show, that for me actually would have been, I think, you know, you could accept the occasional screwy finish, sometimes you need them to progress a storyline, but if there had been one, or maybe two, and this hadn't been one of them, I think this would have capped off a very good show. But as it was just another in a long line of bad finishes, and it left a sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think Mr. Perfect would have applauded the way that Cactus Jack sold the taser shot, though. Writhing about in agony, despite being a good 3 or 4 inches away from touching his leg.
Were you as angry as I was about the finish, yeah, and also your thoughts on my qualms with the stipulation?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, they just told such a great story. They really were, for want of a better phrase, really just battering each other, and it just looked really good, and it should have just been almost looking like just a fight to the death type style, just kept on hitting each other until one couldn't get back up. The last thing this match needed was that silly finish. But you're right, the stipulation was really stupid as well. They may as well have just said a no DQ match for all that it was. I didn't really understand that you had 30 seconds and then you got a bonus 10 seconds. For me, some of the highlights of the Survivor Series, when you've got a guy just being eliminated and then the guy that's triumphant then gets eliminated because it's just such quick fire. That's the sort of thing that works. Not that I'm saying you should be able to get multiple pins after one attack, but I didn't understand the need for 40 seconds or so between each pinfall.
No, and it's the shame is that you're just overcomplicating something that doesn't need to be complex. This would have been a great match, as you say, had it have been a no DQ or a falls count anywhere or something like that. Something relatively simple, but just all the stuff with waiting. As I say, the fact that Cactus Jack pinned Vader twice during this match and didn't win the match, just to me feels a little bit weird.
Yeah, I had to go back to the, I flicked back to the start of the description of the rules because I was going a little bit cross-eyed after the first telling. So if you're a fan sitting in there and you've just sat through, 2.5 hours of a show that it's difficult to imagine many people would have went away satisfied with, it's getting your head around that for a main event, it just probably just confused the audience and left them feeling a little bit flat, which is a shame for what was a very, very good hard-hitting bout.
How long can Dusty Rhodes keep cooking up bad finishes?
I don't think he can keep...
There must be a limited supply at some point. He must run out of terrible ideas.
Even the man behind the Dusty finish hat, yeah, he has to run out of Dusty finishes. You're right, though. One or two would have been fine, because whilst the lows a non-clean finish at a pay-per-view, you understand the need that, for storyline purposes, that a DQ or a count-out can lead to the next match, the next big pay-per-view, or manager interfering once or twice. I cannot understand that. But you can't pack a card like that and expect people to turn out in numbers for the next show. I'll be interested to see what the buy rate and the crowd attendances are like for Battle Bowl on the back of that, because that sounds like an event that's got not the most straightforward of concepts to it either. Why are I'd love to just ask Dusty Rhodes, why are you trying to bamboozle the WCW fans when you've got great talent? I mean, you look down the card, you've got people like Sting, you've got Flair, Rude, Orndorff, Steamboat. These are guys that can put on good matches. You've Stunning Steve and Dustin Rhodes. These are all guys that give them 20 minutes. They can tell a great story. Why do you need to give them 18 and a half minutes to tell a great story and then just put a 30-second screwy finish in the end? Who's benefiting from this?
Well, and you're almost punishing your fans for investing in a match. Get invested in a match, oh, but we'll ruin it. And it's like, occasionally you can do that, because occasionally the story needs to be told. But this, I don't think this is the case. Maybe it is, but I don't think it is. And it's like, there's going to become a point when they stop caring. Because it's like, they can't invest in a match because they know that all of these near falls are wasted because there's going to be some stupid finish to cap it all off. And it might not be now, it might not be Battle Bowl, it might not be Starrcade, it might not be for another year or year and a half, but eventually, you keep doing this, they're going to turn off. And the minute they turn off, you're never going to get them back. And that I think is a real problem. Craig, your overall thoughts on the show and a score rating?
It would score a lot higher had it not been for the last minute of each match. I'm going to say maybe a 6, to be honest. It would have probably been an 8 if there'd been more clean finishes and less screwy finishes, but it really did damage the pay-per-view. That you notice you work your way through, that the finishes just get screwier. I don't really follow that.
Oh, no, hang on. The Vader finish was nowhere near as bad as the Ric Flair, Rick Rude finish.
Oh, no, okay, but you take my point that it built up to the Ric Flair thing, and that maybe that left people thinking, oh, well, maybe the next one's going to either be utterly ridiculous or a clean finish. But yes, no, whatever we think of the respective finishes in each match, the card and the show was entirely damaged by the frequency of them.
I mean, I guess you could say a taser is ridiculous. I think the only way to top the Ric Flair, Rick Rude finish would be if the Hardy Race had a shot Cactus Jack. I think that would have capped it all off. I'm going to give you, Colin, Craig, I'm going to give it a 6. It's, again, I thought this was at times a really good show. I think this show actually shows the depth that WCW got in terms of talent, that you've got David Boy Smith in kind of the third match on the card. Dustin Rhodes and Steve Austin. I said, on paper, this looks like a really good show. And I think, as you say, if you shave off the finishes of all the matches and, you know, kind of rework them, you end up with a really good card that probably would have been one of the better pay-per-views of the year. But, again, and I'm just banging the same drum here, so many bad finishes just leaves a sour taste in the mouth. But 6 out of 10, I think, for work rate and some of the wrestling. And the main event, I did rant for a while about my problems with the stipulation and the finish, but the main event was excellent. I don't want to take that away from either Cactus Jack or Vader, in the sense that that was a superb match and they don't deserve to be tarred by external decisions, and they put on a great brawl, and I think that deserves to be credited with it.
Yep, no, you're absolutely right, but it was just the frequency and of the screw finishes. And just to hit slightly on the taser stuff, I mean, a year and a half prior to this show, the Mountie was doing really bad tasery stuff as well. Have they really not, why did WCW not look at that and think, that just looks really rubbish? And when you compare the contrast between the two promotions, when I talked in the news about the attendances at the event, if the WCW, with the roster that they've got, are just able to put in a couple of good pay-per-views, a couple of good house shows, there's no reason that they can't beat a very troubled WWF, but then they just churn out this event. It's confusing.
Craig, let's move on to the WWF. We'll start with Crush turning heel on Randy Savage during an episode of Raw this month. I thought it was a very good segment.
I did as well. I thought the Crush face character was a very limited appeal. The big, smiley, happy-go-lucky big man, it didn't seem to click. And I've always been quite a big fan of Crush. I think it's a guy that, if you look at him, is the sort of guy that Vince would really like. So the idea of him turning heel was good. I have to admit, though, the whole concept itself was slightly bizarre. I mean, Macho Man didn't rush to his aid when Yokozuna was destroying him, so he sides with Yokozuna.
Well, he sided with Mr. Fuji, which is a...
But I guess the sort of means aren't so great, but the end works. No, I thought it was quite a good segment, and it gives Crush, who still looks a little bit green despite being in the company for a few years, it gives him a chance to work with an established superstar like Macho Man. So I think it can only benefit him long term as well on that front.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I saw one of his promos, I think the week before he got written off by Yokozuna, where basically he challenged him, and that was kind of a babyface promo. I actually saw a little bit there that told me, maybe there's something you can work with here on the babyface side of things, but I think it's gonna be easier for him as a good but no better talker, to be managed by someone like Mr. Fuji. I think it's probably gonna be easier for him to work as a heel, given his size, because he doesn't have to necessarily play like a vulnerable type baby face. I think that'd be quite difficult for him to do. But as you say, I think one thing that they tried to explain, but I don't think they did a particularly good job of, was why he was now aligned with Mr. Fuji. I think, basically said that while he'd been away, that Mr. Fuji basically had kind of shown him his ways and stuff like that, and basically see, like, almost felt like they basically kind of implied that he brainwashed him. It's not unforgivable, but it's kind of one of those things where, given how jarring it was, given that 3 months ago we saw him on the receiving end of 4 Banzai drops by Yokozuna, and now he rocks up with Yokozuna's manager, that's the sort of plot hole that you really need to be explicit about filling, and they didn't do that.
Absolutely. When we saw that you've just referenced, the 4 Banzai drops, it almost looked like it was generating sympathy for the Crush character to push him up to the next level, being involved in maybe a main event program against Yokozuna, and then just for him to return, being aligned through Mr. Fuji with him just seemed quite bizarre. But Crush is an interesting one. You sort of see his arsenal of moves, and it's it's surprisingly good. Take his match up, the 93 King of the Ring, the IC title match with Shawn Michaels, and that's a very good match. And as big men go, Crush is quite good in the ring, despite his Yoko Ono-esque effect on the breakup of Demolition, but maybe that's something for another time.
Maybe it is. But yeah, no, I mean, my qualms about that kind of logic hold aside, I thought it was a very good segment. I thought he cut a good heel promo, I thought, and it kind of brought the best out in Savage, and it kind of brought out the preacher mode in Savage almost. And so they dialed that up, and it was really nice that they kind of teased him turning, turning back babyface, and then right at the end he hit Savage with that sucker punch. I thought that was a really effective segment, and I think that if they do have plans to push Crush forward, so working with someone like Savage can only be good for him.
Without question, if anyone can take Crush to the next level, it's someone like Savage.
Let's move on to one of the other, I think, big moments, kind of things on Raw, which was also the Intercontinental title, which was held up after Shawn Michaels was written off or rested or whatever we're going to call it. One of the better battle royals I think you're going to see, this Intercontinental title battle royal. I mean, it started as all they all do, two men in the ring, not really much of a story to tell. But I think once they got down to the last six, and it was Macho Man, Razor, the Quebecers, Adam Bomb, and I'm forgetting one more, which is annoying. But there was four heels and two faces in the ring. I thought they took Rick Martel, of course. He was the other guy who won it. So they ended up with those final six, and obviously it was the two babyface against the four heels. They got rid of Adam Bomb pretty early on, and then they got rid of Savage early on, and so it was Razor taking a 3-on-1 attack by the Quebecers and Rick Martel. I thought they did it in a way where it wasn't unbelievable that Razor was able to escape that, and obviously, yeah, that was always going to be the plan, but I thought they did really well in terms of a good kind of 3 or 4 minute build of sympathy on Razor before he finally was able to kind of distract the two Quebecers and eliminate them both quickly. And Craig, I don't know about you, but I just thought this was as battle royals go, I thought this was way above average.
Yeah, I've never really been a huge fan of the battle royal because, like you say, it's just maybe 20 odd guys just brawling about. It's difficult really to follow. But no, this was really good. But one minor criticism might be looking at the roster that filled it at the start was the lack of believable winners. But I think that maybe just goes back to what we discussed earlier on with WCW potentially having the much stronger roster. But they were able to get the Razor and Martel, and they were able to get a very good match on Raw, so it worked out quite well in the end.
Yeah, no, I think we're going to have that roster-based discussion, I think, probably on the show, maybe next show, maybe the one after. We'll see about that in terms of comparing the two rosters. But I think as well as to follow up their match on the following Raw was a good match. It wasn't anything special, but I thought it was, we're talking about WCW with a ton of bad finishes. Razor's Edge, clean pinfall, about 10 minutes, nice match, and we've got a new champion. And as I said, they're nicely building Razor's babyface character.
Yeah, no, it is coming along quite well. He never looked really ready for his WWF title shot at the beginning of the year at the Royal Rumble, but they really are doing some good stuff. I really like a vignette as a way of building up a guy, so I liked the way that he came in, but at the start he maybe didn't look quite like he was ready for it, but the Razor Ramon character is really, really coming on to something. So then a run with the Intercontinental title, the workers belt, if you will, in the WWF, then can only lead to some good things for him.
And based on all all things that we see, given that they are mentioning Shawn Michaels, and given what we reported in the news at the start of the show, I think it looks like Michaels will be back at some point. Although obviously we don't know when. There's 3 months banded about, so maybe a Royal Rumble or a WrestleMania type feud for those two. I mean, it could be do wonders for Razor, particularly as I think as good as that they've kind of done so far in his babyface character, how do you maintain that bad guy, quote, literal, quote-unquote, bad guy character as a face? I think that's going to be interesting to see how they do that. But I think they started well enough.
No, absolutely. And I think you're right. The idea of an HBK versus Razor feud, I think that can only benefit them both. Just the idea of having two relatively young, hard-working, over guys feuding over the IC title. But whilst we're going to come back to it, maybe end of year might be a good review of the roster stuff, but when there isn't too much going on in the WWF mid-card, to have two potential standouts like that feuding over the IC title, that Vince McMahon must be pretty happy with that.
No, you're certainly correct. Let's look ahead to Survivor Series, which is coming up next month. We don't know the full card yet, but based on what I can see at the moment, we've got a main event of the American Heroes, which is Lex Luger, the Steiner Brothers, and Tatanka against the Foreign Fanatics, Foreign Menaces, call them what you will, Yokozuna, the Quebecers, and Ludwig Borger. We've got Adam Bomb, IRS, Rick Martel, and Diesel facing Mr. Perfect, Razor Ramon, Marty Jannetty, and the 1-2-3 Kid. We've got the Hart Family versus Jerry the King Lawler and his Knights. And another match rumored to be on the card is the Rock and Roll Express against the Heavenly Bodies. And that card will obviously fill out between now and then. Craig, what are your thoughts at the moment as we're a few weeks out from Survivor Series? Does this look like a card that people are going to be able to invest in?
I think so. The main event, I mean, that's just been building for a long time. I think, I still think that Ludwig Borger's grudge with the USA based on environmental stuff and educational attainments slightly weak, but I think the whole foreigners versus American stuff's tried and tested. I think the match that sounds the most intriguing for me has to be what can only be described as the guys that don't have anything else that are baby faces against the guys that don't have anything else that are heels match.
That's Adam Bomb, IRS, Rick Martel and Diesel against Mr. Perfect, Razor Ramon, Marty Jannetty and the 1-2-3 Kid.
Absolutely, there's plenty of talent in there to put on a good match, and the Hart stuff, that's another long running feud, big characters, it's difficult not to buy into that. And for, I guess, wrestling purists, the Rock and Roll Express Heavenly Bodies match, considering how good the Heavenly Bodies have looked since they've made their way onto Raw, and their match at SummerSlam against a very well oiled and established tag team in the Rock and Roll Express, that's looking like a pretty good card.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree with that. I mean, I think in terms of the main event, I think there is definitely an imperative that I'm assuming at least they're still going to go forward with Lex Luger's push kind of going into 1994. And I think that, okay, he got sort of a clean win at SummerSlam, but I think they're going to have to maintain that momentum going forward, with him. And it's a match that while the focus is on the kind of, the two, Yokozuna and Lex Luger, the two main guys, it's a sort of match where it's a little bit put together, but you can kind of fork this off into three different matches that I think would all mean something. You know, Tatanka and Ludwig Borger, and then you've got the Quebecers and the Steiners, we know about the history there. So I think there's enough in this card that I think people should be interested. And I think that'll wrap us up for this month's show. Let's go into our kind of Craig, your kind of match moment, incident of the month. What was the kind of the one highlight for you, the standout this month?
I think Halloween Havoc's definitely home to that. On paper, it would have been Rhodes Austin, but it just has to be for me the main event, Vader versus Cactus Jack. Two guys, really stiff looking offense, and both bloodied. They told a very believable story, so that would be my thing to watch.
Yeah, no, I have to agree. Man, I really enjoyed the Battle Royal and how what Razor Ramon got off the back of that and his win over Rick Martel. But I think that match is one of the highlights of 1993, the Vader Cactus Jack match. And as you said when we were reviewing the show, that Vader is so good as that big brute. and he looks so convincing, and you've got someone like Cactus Jack who ain't afraid to throw himself around either. That's like almost the perfect pairing between two guys who you really wouldn't think would be a good pairing in terms of traditional kind of wrestlers over the years. Two just big guys, and yet they're capable of one having a brutal match, but two, like, not having, because you might think, well, yeah, they could have a brawl, but it'd be a brawl. But I think these two could capable of having a good wrestling match if they need to as well.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be going into the match between the two expecting a drop to hold or a flying head scissors. But if you're wanting a hard hitting affair, then those two will deliver. And you're absolutely right in terms of Cactus Jack selling. He just sells like nothing else. And it's probably not the hardest task to do when you've got an offence that looks as stiff as Vader's does. But two guys telling a great, really great story, despite probably in terms of wrestling skills, limited ability, but two really guys that are right at the top of their game.
And his selling abilities also, it now includes being tasered, which there's that as well.
Like no one else.
No, literally as well. Craig, thank you very much for joining me this month. Remind people where they can find you on Twitter and your blog.
Yeah, of course, I can be found at Twitter, at twitter.com/CraigW4584, and my blog, my pet project, can be found at ringthedambell.wordpress.com.
Excellent. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Bobby Bamber. Shout out to our vaporised friend, Colin Judkins, who can be found on Twitter at C_Judders. We'll be back in a month's time. Big month next month. We've got Survivor Series, we've got a Clash of Champions, and in theory at least, we've got Battle Bowl, although quite whether we're going to be able to cover all of them, I don't know, save the show being about 3 hours long. But yeah, we will be back in a month. We'll definitely do Survivor Series. We'll definitely do The Clash. Battle Bowl may or may not be covered. And yeah, so that'll be the end of next month. I've been Bob Bamber. This has been the October 1993 episode of the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Wrestling20Years, Wrestling20YRS, sorry. And we live tweet Raw generally every Friday night in 2013 time, and shows basically whenever I can. It's on UK time, which isn't ideal for our American audience, but I do them when I can. But we've got plenty of big shows coming up this month, so just follow us on Twitter, and I try and keep people updated as and when I'm going to do the shows. Anyway, that's been the end of this week's episode, and until next month, goodbye.